ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Philip Morgan, a positioning expert and training guru who teaches everyone around the world to position their services well. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. Hi, Philip.
Jane, so glad to be here.
It's amazing that you made it. With all your busy schedule.
Yeah, I know.
So we're going to talk about a lot of things today, but so that people can know you better, I'm going to ask you a short blitz questionnaire. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Amazing. So, Philip, what do you do for a living? All your big honors.
You know, I can reduce it down to one sentence. I teach self-employed software developers how to generate their own leads so that they don't have to depend on referrals or luck.
Great.
That encapsulates other things, but it really is that simple. I teach people basically how to market themselves so that they're in a better position in their business.
Mm-hmm. So what components does that entail in your training business?
So there's several things. I have a book called The Positioning Manual for Technical Firms, and that's one way that I help people. I have a mentoring program called the Positioning Accelerator Program, and that's a little more structure, a little more guidance than the book. I coach people sometimes on request, and I'm involved in Brendan Dunn's program, Double Your Freelancing Academy. And I teach people about positioning there. I appear on podcasts. And right now, that's about it. I have been taking a break from client work in order to focus on building some other parts of my business. So it's that stuff. The book, the mentoring program, coaching, and working in other people's programs as an expert and an instructor.
Sounds amazing. How did you get there to where you are today?
It was kind of a scratch your own itch kind of thing. So I became self-employed in 2008 when I got laid off. A lot of other people did too, because the economy was not doing very well worldwide at that time. And my skill was as a writer. So I would do things like write case studies or white papers. Basically content marketing, right? And I was a pretty good writer, but I was so bad at marketing my own services that I just was constantly on the brink of financial ruin. Like I literally went through a bankruptcy because I wanted to stay self-employed. I thought it was easy, but I was really bad at it. And the part that I was bad at is not doing the work. The part was marketing my own services. So I really was, it sort of became a challenge to myself to get better at it. And, you know, I did what I could to learn how to market myself better, came across this concept of positioning, which really brought a lot of things together for me. And as a result, you know, once I felt like I really understood what positioning was and how it worked and how to apply it, I wrote a book about it. And I wasn't really planning this, but there are not a lot of other books out there about positioning. There are no other books out there about how positioning helps, how it can be applied by the self-employed person or the small professional services firm. And so I wrote the only book, ended up that I wrote the only book about how to do that for that particular audience. And that really led to what I do now.
Sounds amazing. I would love to give a little bit of historical background. So to our listeners, we've known each other for a while due to the Productized Consulting Roundtable for a few years. And Philip was one of the early adopters of Productized Consulting as we know it today with his, at that time, famous service, the Content Sherpa, if you don't mind mentioning that.
That's right. Yeah, that was kind of part of the journey, and I really did sort of gloss over that middle part. So I definitely have experimented with a lot of things, like my Content Sherpa, which was, like you mentioned, a productized content marketing production service. So you know, kind of the whole thing that's been the thread throughout is that I'm interested in helping people who are in the sort of technical end of things, you know, software developers, that kind of thing. I've been interested in helping them market themselves better.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, you could say it can help everyone, but that's a part of your positioning. So you're niching down to software developers.
That's true. Even, and I think today we'll talk about the stuff that's more broadly applicable to designers and people outside of software development. But you're right. I eat my own dog food, as they say. I definitely have a very clear focus about who's the ideal client for me.
What does your typical day look like?
So since August, I've been in the office just 3 days a week. I reduced my work week. So typical work week goes Tuesday through Thursday for me. I wake up at 5 a.m. It's nice. Let me tell you, it's been really great. I kind of started doing that because I was just tired and had been working very hard for about 2 years and felt like I needed a break. But actually, it's become a semi-permanent thing and really has led to some other stuff. Anyway, I wake up at 5 a.m. local time here in California. I generally work in my home office from 5:10 a.m. till about 5 p.m. I'll take several breaks throughout the day. One of the first things I do, I have a 3x5 card taped to my computer display that has like the three things I need to do. So the first priority for the day is to write an email for my email list. And the second is to check in with mentoring students or work on any sort of to-dos that I have for helping my mentoring students. And then the third thing is kind of a catch-all. It's just anything else that I need to do that day. So it might be working on a sales page or putting together a webinar or a bunch of other stuff could be in that third category. But that's really it. That's kind of what my day looks like. I'm home a lot. I don't get out much, and that's really by choice. I just love where I live and love being home. So, that's what Tuesday through Thursday looks like.
That's great. You belong to one of those people who email their list religiously on a daily basis.
Every weekday, I send out an email at 6 a.m. I mean, it usually gets scheduled. It's written in advance, a couple days in advance and scheduled. But I do, in fact, if you join my list, you get an email from me every day, Monday through Friday, until you unsubscribe or don't.
Yeah, we should talk about that more. Actually leads to all the onlookers unsubscribing and everything else being just super fans.
I think it does. I think it's a great way to really find out who is most interested in your message. Yeah, I mean, you'll read a lot of articles that say, don't email your list too much or your open rate will go down. But to me, that's just that's an excuse. Like, if someone's not really interested in what I have to teach, then, you know, they don't need to be on my email list.
Makes perfect sense. What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
The thing I like the most is helping my audience members make that transition from being a generalist, being underpaid, and the challenges that come with a sort of generalist approach to self-employment. And transitioning away from that into being some kind of specialist or expert. And not everybody wants to do that, and that's fine. So some people are very happy being a generalist. Some people are just working for themselves to kind of, you know, bring some money in between jobs or that kind of thing. And that's fine. I'm not really here to help people in that situation. I'm here to help people who are a generalist and not really happy about it, and want to transition into some kind of specialist role where they can charge more for their services and have more demand for their services. So I just enjoy that because it's not just a logical mental shift, although it does involve some mindset changes. It's also an emotionally challenging process, and one where, you know, it really helps to have an outside perspective that I can provide. And so it's just an endlessly fascinating thing to help people with. I, you sent me these questions in advance, and I was thinking, what do I enjoy the least? And there, I got to be honest, there's nothing I don't enjoy. I mean, yeah, there's stuff like, I don't know, there's some chores involved in my business, like, you know, copying emails over to my website and dealing with the fact that the WordPress editor, you know, maybe doesn't format those correctly or whatever. But just in the big picture, that stuff is trivial, and it doesn't really interfere with my enjoyment of my business.
That's great. So you financed your situation to the point where you work 3 days a week and you enjoy every bit of your own job. That's amazing.
Pretty much. Yeah, I'm very, very fortunate and very grateful to be in that position. But also, I mean, I worked for it too. So it was something I had a small part in making happen.
Awesome. What is your next big thing?
I'm working on a course. So, you know, I have these two things that are very important. I have this book, which is a, you know, self-guided sort of thing. It's a manual. It's very comprehensive. It's also very short and succinct. And that's good. And I have this mentoring program, which helps people apply the information in the book. But what I don't really have is what I'm working on, which is a course, sort of an online course version of the book. The reason I'm doing that is because I believe there's a lot of people who would like some additional support beyond just what the book offers, but they can't afford the mentoring program, which is a monthly thing. It's kind of open-ended. So some people are there 2 or 3 months, and other people are there 6 or 7 months. And so at a minimum, it's going to be $1,000 to participate in that. And that's just out of reach for some folks who could really benefit from narrowing down their business and becoming some kind of specialist. So for those people, I'm trying to build this course. I'm in the very early stages. I worked with someone named Janelle Allen. It was just amazing. Janelle, you know, asked a bunch of questions, did some research, talked to some people in my audience, and helped me design what I think will be a much better plan for the course than if I'd just done it myself. So that's the next big thing for me. That's what I'm working on in those 3 days a week when I'm not like on the phone with mentoring students or guesting on a podcast or whatever.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sounds great. Good luck in launching that. I'm sure it's going to be
Thank you.
A rock star course.
Thank you.
So let's talk about positioning. From what I experienced, positioning can do to a consulting business and to any business, in fact, is pure magic. So tell us, what's your, you know, definition of positioning, how you talk about that in your books and courses?
You know, I think that's going to be my new definition. Positioning is a magic trick that takes 6 to 18 months to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
it really
is like magic, but it does take time. And that's the first thing people should know is it's a business transformation that begins with how you market yourself. So the people who I hope are paying attention to this are people who are some kind of generalist. Like they're used to taking almost any kind of client or having a wide variety of clients approach them. And I think this is something where that's very common with designers, because design is really, as I understand it, a very flexible sort of process that can be applied to a lot of situations, right? Design can create value in, you know, industrial design all the way to digital design. And for that reason, I think designers tend to be generalists. So positioning is a way of addressing some of the problems that are common for generalists. And again, I just want to add in the caveat that I don't ever try to really force this down anybody's throat or say, if you're not narrowing down your focus in your business, you're doing something wrong. I think for a lot of people, they can make it work being a generalist. But a lot of generalists run into the problem of it's hard to attract business because there's no focus to what they do. It's so general purpose that it's hard for them to attract business. And if they have a slow point coming up and they can see that coming, Like they can look down at their calendar and see that a couple months from now, all their projects are wrapping up and they've got no new projects on the books. They are going to have a hard time filling that gap in their schedule because they don't know who they should approach to, other than their existing clients and their network, they don't really know who they could go after to develop new business. So that's one of the problems of being a generalist. The other is that you have an increasing amount of competition. So I live in the United States. I live in one of the more expensive parts of the United States, you know, which is the West Coast of California. And we're seeing it become more and more expensive to just live here. We're also
not
seeing,
to mention other activities.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know, some of the nicer parts of life. So, you know, we're seeing that, and we're seeing an increasing number of very talented, very skilled people who live in much cheaper parts of the world start to compete for the same business that that we might compete for. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not against that at all. But it means that all of a sudden, if you're a generalist designer or a generalist of any type, you have to start thinking about how you separate yourself, how you distinguish yourself or differentiate yourself from someone who has the same skills, a very similar looking portfolio of work. How do you set yourself apart from them, especially if your rate is two or three times as much as theirs and you really would like to raise your rate rather than reduce it? Mm-hmm. So to an extent, this is not just a problem that faces people in expensive places like, you know, the West and East coasts of America, but really anywhere in the world. If you're trying to demonstrate to clients that you're the best option, how do you do that other than having a nice portfolio? What's the next step? So that's the situation I feel like a lot of generalists are in, and I certainly was when I was operating as a generalist. And the solution, I think, is to specialize in some way. It's to narrow down your business focus, and that's where the magic starts that you referenced. It doesn't happen overnight, but I find that when people are willing to narrow down their focus, and maybe I should stop and just give an example or two of what that would be like.
So that would someone, be great. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So if someone designs websites, they're a generalist. Okay. They can take that skill of designing websites and apply it to a very wide range of types of websites. So they might narrow down by picking what's called a market vertical, which is basically a type of company. And in their marketing, they would start by saying, I specialize in designing websites for, my go-to example is cosmetic dentists because, you know, because that's fairly specific. And I'm not saying that everybody should be a website designer for cosmetic dentists. I'm just saying that's an example of a more specific, more narrow type of focus than a generalist would have. What will happen is a couple of things. First of all, over time, you will start to understand the lingo, the business model, and the things that really make for a really good cosmetic dentistry website. And that will allow you to provide more value to your clients, which justifies a higher rate. Now, what doesn't take so much time is almost immediately you start looking like to a cosmetic dentist like you're one of them. Not that you're a cosmetic dentist, but that you have chosen to sort of be in their world. And that means you've decided you're not going to be in everybody else's world, but you're going to be in their world. And that changes how they look at you. That starts to make them think of you as an insider, as one of them. And that gets them excited about you in a different way than they would get excited about a generalist web designer. So that's one example of what it would look like to narrow down your focus. And that's just the last thing I was going to say about that is that's where mm-hmm. the magic starts happening, because cosmetic dentists start to feel differently about you. They start to trust you in a more rapidly, and just they trust you more because you're saying, I'm one of you and I have specialized experience in your world.
And I would like to point out here that there is such a wide spectrum of being focused and unfocused, because you mentioned web design. Surprisingly, it's an already narrow niche, because there is a whole crowd of designers who are, you know, doing also branding, print collateral, whatsoever, web design, UI design, etc.
Right.
So for some people, just sticking to websites would be already a big win. Now there goes picking an industry that also has like a bunch of steps inside, which is medical, dental, and cosmetic dentists.
Right.
So a few steps of brevity, and you just pinpointed like the the last point in that spectrum. So any of that towards a specific direction is good.
But I would agree. I would agree.
The real magic happens on the smaller side of the spectrum.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point in that everybody's going to be starting at a different point. So someone who's a complete generalist, one of the first things they can do is just increase their focus in just one dimension. Maybe it's instead of doing just generalist design, like you said, you know, branding this and that. They may want to narrow down further. You brought up a really good point about how it doesn't have to be this extreme level of narrow focus. Even a small incremental move away from being a generalist and towards being a specialist can be very valuable.
Absolutely. So the formula that became my entry point to the world of positioning was in Brennan Dunn's Double Your Freelancing book. And it sounded for me something like, I am a something doing something, solving a specific problem for a specific audience. And unlike other designers, let's say, I do it in a specific way. That's the way I know positioning. Do you have a different approach, or do you have a more extensive approach, or is it essentially the same?
So I have it's based on the same idea, which is that you're starting to be very specific and very clear about who your services are ideal for and what it is that you do for them. So in that sense, it's identical. What I have found with working with probably, I don't know the exact number. I mean, if you combine email and my mentoring program and some of the sort of partnership things I've done, it's hundreds of people that I've worked with in some capacity on this transition. And what I found is that the first thing people can do is to pick a market vertical and just keep doing what they're doing. So maybe they're talking about themselves as a designer, or maybe they're talking about themselves as a branding consultant or a web designer, or you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep talking about what they do in the same term, but they add a focus on a market vertical. And that's enough of an increase in specificity to, over time, help you become able to deliver much more value to a business, make your marketing much easier, because now you have all this clarity about who exactly your marketing is meant to reach. And then finally, it's enough of a narrowing down of your focus for most people to be absolutely terrifying, to make it... it's so funny how this happens, and it's happened to me, so I understand it from a firsthand perspective, and I've seen it happen just to hundreds of people. If you're operating as a generalist, and then you decide you're going to start saying no to some of the clients you would have said yes to, it's just terrifying, because you feel like you're going to destroy your business, you're going to have much less work than you need, and so you have to get through that fear. And there are ways to do it. I mean, if you want, you can just trust me that it's going to be fine. But it does take a little bit of sort of faith that it's going to work out okay.
What are the exact steps that a person can do? So you do research, then you define your new positioning, and how does that transform into everyday activities? Like my number one example would go, you know, rewrite your website, your main headline, saying that now you do that for a specific audience. But that's very, you know, my top of the head idea. You probably have like a roadmap for introducing a new, more precise positioning for your students.
I do. Yeah. And that's where it can get a little messy, because people are at all sorts of different places. Even, you know, someone who's a generalist freelancer, they may have actually, they may be doing a lot to market themselves, or they may be doing nothing at all to market themselves. And I've seen people who operate, you know, reasonably successful freelance businesses who have no website at all. You know, they just have an email address. They do everything over email and they get referrals. So it really does depend. If you have a website and some kind of marketing, this also hurts a little bit. What I would suggest is you go through the website, you change the headings and just the very obvious parts of your website so that they talk about how you are focused on this audience or this market vertical. And if you have a portfolio, I suggest pruning out, removing the parts that are not relevant to your positioning focus. And that may be enough for some people to start with. You know, if you have no website or if you're in some other situation, then like I said, that's where it gets a little more tricky, but that's sort of the starting point. Of course, there's other parts of this roadmap. Like before you make the decision, there's research you can do. Yes. There's ways you can validate that you're making a good choice.
Let's elaborate on that a little bit. I'm super curious about the research phase.
So there's really sort of two roads you can go down if you're narrowing your focus. One is to focus on a market vertical or an audience. And that's, for most people, that's the one that makes sense. It's about 80-20. For about 80% of generalists, the first thing they need to do is focus on a market. And then for the other 20%, they may be able to pursue a more advanced option, which instead of focusing on market vertical is to focus on a type of problem. So I'll give you a quick example of that. One example of focusing on a problem, there's I'm acquainted with this guy who he helps companies through market themselves around the process of doing a rebrand. And that's a good example of focusing on a specific problem. It can be very, you know, profitable to do that, very lucrative. It also requires that you know about companies that are going through a rebrand in advance of them doing that, which is kind of a challenge. And it also requires that, or maybe those companies know about you and they seek you out. So it's a little bit more difficult to pull off that kind of position from a marketing perspective. So that's why there's only about 20% of cases where that's the right way to position yourself. For most generalist freelancers, the first move they're going to make is to pick a market vertical. And, you know, there are ways that you can make sure that's the right choice. One of my favorite things is simply to try to build a list for that market vertical of potential clients or ideal clients. If you can easily build a list for that market vertical, then there's a good chance that that's a good area for you to focus in. You can also look at, you know, how many case studies do you have, or how strong is your proof that you're a good fit for that market vertical. You can look at what level of access you have, and you can look at your own level of enthusiasm about focusing on that market vertical. So there's a number of specific things you can do to make sure it's a good choice. But those are the basic two ways that people approach positioning.
Mm-hmm. I would say it's really important to listen to your feelings, because that's the audience you'll be working on and nobody else. So you've got to love them to a certain extent. The other important factor, as you mentioned, is making sure they're accessible online, because that means a lot of pains relieved whenever you are marketing or doing anything else.
Yeah, that's right.
So positioning products and services, are they from completely different areas, or do you have something in common?
Conceptually, it works the same way. The difference that I see is that with products, a lot of times a product company will have more money to spend on things like advertising. And so they can use advertising to build up a position for their product. Whereas most, small design studios, solo self-employed designers, they have literally $0 to spend on advertising. And so they need to become known for what they do in different ways, and they can't just kind of spend their way into people's mind. That's one of the big differences, but conceptually it really works the same. In the world of products, one of the great examples is Procter & Gamble. Instead of trying to become known for all the products they produce, their company, Procter & Gamble, kind of is in the background, and every product that they release is branded as its own thing, and they try to find a unique position for that product. So rather than trying to position the company, who has, you know, dozens or maybe even hundreds of products, they position each product individually. And if you kind of look at their strategy with how they handle their products, I think they're a good example in the product world to look at to understand how positioning works.
In my very early, almost childhood days, one of the big revelations was that big companies like Procter & Gamble and Unilever and whoever like that have multiple brands within the same company, and the brand doesn't equal company, and that all we perceive is just a limited set of things that we see. Everything else is economy and a very complex one.
Yeah, exactly. I think maybe in the software world, Basecamp might be a good example of this. I think the reasons for Basecamp getting rid of, or you know, killing off or selling off their other products, like HiRise, is one of the products they got rid of. They spun it out into its own company. I'm sure there were many reasons for doing that, aside from positioning. But from a positioning perspective, that's a great example of how it's just very challenging to try to have these different kind of unrelated products all under one brand and one position. And I think you see a lot of companies do that. They try to do that and they fail to pull it off. Or in the case of Basecamp, I think they saw that it would just be easier if they got rid of that other stuff and they had a singular focus. And if there's one thing I could say about positioning, like maybe one takeaway for people, it's that there's real power in having a singular specific focus on something. It really makes your marketing more effective, and ultimately I think makes your business more profitable over time.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are problems when your products or, you know, brands or services are scattered and different because you struggle to put them on together into a single story. But it can also be problematic if you have similar things for a single audience, because you now struggle to, you know, educate them enough so that they can tell the difference between them. Yep. So either way, depriving people of extra choices is a good thing, because now they have to, you know, they clearly see, crystal clear, see your value proposition, not like make random choices between random switches or something. And we also have to do like a number of, you know, housekeeping things like email marketing, podcast appearances, anything else, and you're going to have trouble thinking what to promote each and every time you just take a pen or a mic in your hands.
That's right. Yeah, that's huge.
So whenever you have a chance for a single period of your life, focus on something specific. You can change it later, you can pivot, but it makes life so much easier to focus on something. And that's like that's the essence and part of the magic of that positioning thing.
It really is. Yeah, it frees up a lot of energy that's kind of wasted, I think, when you have too many things going on.
Absolutely. There is one example, not example, like one phrase that I don't want to slip out of this conversation, the Rolodex example, which allows people to pick, you know, an effective way of announcing their new positioning. Like, you know what I'm talking about? So that when we pick a business, everyone you tell it to should be able to instantly spin their Rolodex and find like five businesses like that and say like, oh, this is Mary and this is John. You can refer me to.
Yeah, that's you're kind of filling in some of the gaps in what I talked about with respect to big product brands. Like they benefit, of course, from word of mouth, but they don't rely on it as much as the solo freelancer does. Like the solo freelancer really relies on referrals and word of mouth quite a bit. And as long as you're not 100% relying on that, I think that's fine. So in those referral and word of mouth situations, if you tell somebody who's never met you that, you know, you're a designer, they're probably going to say, well, isn't that nice? And maybe they'll, you know, have some questions, but it's not very interesting to them. And more importantly, it doesn't connect with anything they have the context to understand. But if you say, you know, I design websites for cosmetic dentists, and they happen to know a cosmetic dentist, they will actually get excited about connecting you because it makes sense to connect you. And they can see how that creates value. And they're willing to take the risk of introducing you because they can see that it would create value for their cosmetic dentist friend. So, you know, you're talking about that Rolodex moment, and that's a great example of what being specific facilitates. Is people can start to make introductions for you. And it's surprising how often they will, because I think most people just really do want to be helpful. They're basically interested in, you know, connecting others and helping and creating value where they can. And you really take the risk out of it, and you make it possible for them to do that when you're specific enough that you trigger some connection like that in their mind.
And it's important not to oversmart yourself in that situation, because if you invent some scientific criteria, for example, I help, you know, growth-driven blah, blah, blah businesses, it's not going to associate with any real-life business. Even right. Though it might filter something out, it's just inside your head, not inside anybody else's head.
It's true. Yeah, it just positioning benefits so much from just being very clear and simple and using, you know, just very basic words, nothing fancy. That trying to be too fancy will really work against what you're trying to accomplish.
Absolutely. Any big mistakes you've seen happen while people trying to niche down?
Well, yeah. I mean, in the positioning manual, there's a whole extra, it's not really a book, but there's a whole extra 30 or 40 pages of content about the kind of mistakes that can be made. One, I mean, the big mistake is to care more about your tools than about your client's success. And I've made this mistake, so that's why I feel like I can call it out. It's just very easy, especially as a newer freelancer, to become so excited about your tools. And what I mean specifically is, you know, if you're a writer, you get excited about a certain style of copywriting. Or if you're a designer, you get excited about a particular design approach. And if you let that be the most important thing, then you're going to end up making mistakes in your positioning, because you won't be able to see things from your client's perspective. And so you'll try to position yourself as, you know, some sort of, Jane, you'd have to tell me what's hot right now in the world of design, but...
I don't know, flat design, material design.
Right, okay, yeah. So you're like, okay, you try to position yourself as we're the best flat designers. or, you know, we're flat designers. Like, clients are not going to be able to connect that to the stuff that they care about, which is, you know, make my business better or make this project more successful. And so that's a big positioning mistake, is getting too excited about your tools and not excited enough about what your clients care about. There are others, but I see that one quite a bit.
All right. So as we're wrapping up today's conversation, which was priceless, could you tell us where can people find you online?
They can go to positioningcrashcourse.com and sign up for a free email course and learn about positioning. If they do that, they're going to get that email course. It's like a 5-day email course, and they'll learn some things about positioning. And then they'll be on my list, and then they'll be inside my crazy world, and they'll hear more about me, and they'll learn more about me that way. That's really the best way, because all you have to do is just, you know, give an email address, and it'll start a longer relationship. And then you can kind of decide if I'm worth paying attention to or not from there. So that's what I'd encourage people to do, is go to positioningcrashcourse.com and sign up for that free email course.
That's awesome. Any other sites that you're relevant to? Because, I mean, philipmorganconsulting.com is the one I know. Twitter, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not on Twitter much. I mean, I check it, but not on Twitter much. Mm-hmm. One thing I've done sort of jokingly in the past, but only half jokingly, is I say go to a site called google.com, type in Philip and the word positioning, and you'll see me all over the front page and probably the second and third page too. So that's really kind of speaks to the power of being specific, is that you can start to really become well-known very easily if you pick a specific enough thing to focus on. So that's one thing people can do. Yeah, they can go to philipmorganconsulting.com, just one L in Philip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important one. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. And your perspective on things is amazing. And I'm sure everyone can apply these things in their business. You can never be too niche, really.
That's true. And most people won't go far enough the first time. So, I mean, theoretically, it's possible. You can narrow down too much. But most people would never do it. They wouldn't have the guts to do it. Jane, it was great to be here. Good talking to you today.
Yes, thank you.